Day on Maine Calling, a life of horses and self-discovery. Winston Churchill allegedly said, "There is something about the outside of a horse that is good for the inside of a man." Many of us love horses, but for Chelsea Kennedy, that love and passion has defined her life's work. Horses have taken Kennedy on a personal journey, from horseback riding lessons at Girl Scout camp to competitor, trainer, and owner of Unexpected Farm in Wales, Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with Chelsea Kennedy about her new book, Finding Purpose. We learn how horses and horse people have taught her profound life lessons of gratitude, curiosity, resilience, and self-acceptance. How have horses or other animals changed your life? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Sometimes our best teachers are the animals in our lives. Well, that's true for Chelsea Kennedy. She has spent a lifetime as an equestrian, a competitive rider, and a master horse trainer, and she is the owner of Unexpected Farm in Wales, Maine. Today, we're going to talk with her about her new memoir, Finding Purpose, which explores the lessons she has learned from both horses and horse people in her lifetime. Thanks so much for joining us, Chelsea.
Thank you so much for having me on, Jennifer.
And congratulations on the book. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you love horses? Have you learned anything from being around them or other animals for that matter? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Chelsea, I'm going to start at the beginning. You know, many people who are serious equestrians, as you well know, either grew up on a farm or are from a pretty well-off family, but neither one was the case for you, right?
Yeah, no, I didn't have any real access to horses growing up until I was a tween, like around 11. And that was kind of unusual. Most of the people I met at that point who were into horses had been riding since they were like, you know, 4 or 5.
Yeah. And you met them as a lot of people do at camp, right? Girl Scout camp.
Yep. I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to go to a Girl Scout camp when I was in grade school still. And they had a horse program, and there was no other program I was interested in at that point. It was horses all the way. And that was my first real chance to see if what I had been dreaming about was really true. And for me, it absolutely was. Like, it fulfilled exactly what I thought it would in my desire to learn about horses. And then it just became the obsession.
And we're a few decades after that. But, you know, I want to ask what horses meant for you as a tween and a teen. Such difficult years for so many young people. What did it mean for you to be working with horses and at the barn where you did so many chores to be able to do what you wanted to do, what you loved?
Yeah. It was interesting. You know, you don't know it while you're going through it. You know, you have your hard times and your ups and downs as a tween, but so do all your friends. And like, you are operating in the vacuum of your own life. So you don't really have perspective on those things until you get older, you know? And as I've gotten older and I've supported other young girls in their journey with horses and watched them struggle with the same things that then I can like see in my own life and see how they've been supported by horses, I can recognize that in myself as well. And so for me, finding a group of people who had that same obsession, you know, that's always a community building feeling. Like, everybody as a human being seeks community, seeks acceptance in community. And I didn't really have that in school. But I found that with Horse Girls. It was like an instant little community, you know? And for me, from there, that was the human aspect of it. But the horse aspect of it was the full acceptance of however I showed up every day. So horses are really great mirrors. They reflect back to you what you put out. And they are also exceptionally forgiving. So if you come to the barn and you're having a really hard day, they will reflect that. They may feel a little more anxious or a little more tense or a little more standoffish, but they're also willing to be with you in that space, and give you the opportunity to like shed some of that of what you're carrying through just their presence. Like whenever you're around another being that's willing to hold space for you without needing something from you, then it's easier to let emotions come and go, you know? And so horses are just really gifted at that. And having that as a teenager when there's so much angst and there's so much drama and there's so much feeling of like you're going through something that nobody else can understand, you can feel like your horse understands, you know, in their own way.
Yeah, you know, talking about building community makes me want to talk about something that I found throughout your memoir, Chelsea, which is that even if you aren't a horse person, there are themes here that are really important for all of us. And one, of course, you just mentioned the importance of building community. But another, and there's so many, but another is this openness to new experiences, to new ways of thinking, which it seems as though has been a lifetime journey for you.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like it can be either really, really helpful, but it can teeter into that edge of like, what do I really believe in? You know, what do I stand for? You know, and what do I want to teach and carry forward? And so I think for everyone, it is so important to not become closed-minded and like assume that your way is the right way and assume that you know all there is to know about any subject, not just horses, you know? And then also, as you stay open and you gather information, to then be able to say, this is what I believe to be true for me at this moment. And I am still open for more information. I'm still open to new ideas. And I can integrate those and I can question those respectfully and see what feels true for me as I go along. And that may, you know, that means you're, for me at least, that my views have like really morphed and changed and evolved over the years. And I feel like I'm most interested in spending time with and hearing from other people who've had that same experience, you know, that aren't rigid in their understanding of things, but that are like curious and open and willing to have conversations and have legs that they stand on and believe in and are willing to have discourse with you about that.
I want to talk about your philosophy in horse training, but I want to talk about a couple other things first because it's the way that you develop that philosophy. You've had some real highs and real lows. From the memoir, it seems as though a young Chelsea Kennedy was very driven, very competitive. Is that right? You're nodding. But
Very,
then in your
yeah.
young 20s, kind of everything came crashing down. Tell me about that moment.
Yeah, I feel like I was so driven for, again, reasons that in retrospect I can understand a lot better the older I get. And a lot of them had to do with seeking acceptance, seeking community, seeking validation from external sources. And I think even though I loved horses more than anything in my life at that point, they also became like a tool, like a means to an end, you know, because they were my career and my passion. And so I found myself in a position where, you know, I had a nice horse that I was riding for an owner, and I wanted to prove to her that I was doing a good job. I wanted to prove to the community that I was up and coming in the sport I had chosen. And I didn't recognize when the horse's understanding wasn't in alignment with my goals, and I pushed too hard, and we ended up in like a little bit of an accident on a cross-country course, which could have been so much worse than it was. Like catastrophic accidents with horses happen, too often in the sport of eventing, and this was enough that the horse didn't get hurt, thankfully. I hurt my ankle and my ego in a big way. And what really got hurt was the relationship between me and the horse. And I could feel that and see that like so palpably immediately. And as someone who genuinely loves these animals, like that was the most devastating piece. And on top of that was layered this conversation in my own mind of like, what are people going to say? Am I really bad at this? Is anybody going to think I'm a good trainer anymore? Am I going to be able to keep clients? Am I going to be able to keep progressing? Like just this deluge of self-doubt. And I was really, really struggling with how to come to terms with that in the like few hours after the actual accident. And I don't know. It was like something or somebody was like, woman, you need to snap out of it because this is not okay. Like, this is not a way to live. And I felt a little bit like, I don't know, shocked into a realization that I was absolutely equating my own worth as a human being with my success at these competitions. And the recognition about how unhealthy that was, and how if I continued down that path for the rest of my life, I was only 23, 24, that I was going to really suffer through my whole life. And so it set me on a path of like trying to figure out the role of ego in human existence, which is
Just
such a
a little
lofty thing.
something to try to figure out, right?
I
But it was at this point
know.
that you and I'm guessing, again, Chelsea, I'm not a horse person, but it's at this point that you turned to meditation, a meditation practice, and you actually went away to do this. And I'm guessing, I'm not tr I'm tell me if I'm wrong, that this is not the usual course for a master equestrian.
I mean, I definitely know a few other people who align with those beliefs and those philosophies and those practices, probably not to the degree in which I took it, where I was like, I have to quit horses and meditate for 2.5 years. But for me, like that was the pendulum had swung so far in one direction that I needed it to swing really far in the other to find the middle. And I thought I was looking for another solution, I should say. Like I was looking for an end result, where I could come back to horses and be healthy and just be like good. And what I've learned in the subsequent years is that that doesn't exist. Like it's a lifelong journey, and our egos, they exist. There's no getting around that as a human being, and we're going to always be in a relationship with our ego, and our habits and our patterns and our misbeliefs that we have to be willing to work on forever. And when I say work on, I don't mean like I gotta sit on a cushion 24/7 to feel like my life is okay. It really is like a daily practice of awareness and like choosing to change habits and patterns, which is work, but it's also really rewarding.
You've developed a philosophy, a way with horses that is different in many ways than traditional ways of working with horses. And I'm wondering how your experience with meditation and mindfulness affects the way in which you relate to horses.
That's a great question. I think one of the big things for me is that like seeing all living things as, sentient beings who have their own personality and emotions and drives and desires and quirks. And like that's really, really important. I think that w horse the horse industry in general can accidentally tend or habitually tend towards using horses as a tool, towards self-fulfillment and economic gain or whatever, and the horse gets lost in that, right? And the individuality of the horse and the emotions of the horse and the personality of the horse can really get lost in that. And one of the things that I notice almost every day now when I work with horses is how much I enjoy like that small piece of each horse, like how this one's a little different than that, and this one likes these things, and this one has these little quirks, and taking that so much into consideration in the training, and really feeling like there's a mutual respect, like a mutual, like they know I see them, they know that I am there to hear them as well as to inform them, which just feels so different. We all have had experiences with educators, ones who are just trying to give you the information and make sure that they've checked off that box and done their job, and ones that see you as an individual and want to help you grow as a being. And that's like the relationship I want to have with the horses and with every horse I work with.
I had the privilege of going up to Chelsea's farm a couple weeks ago. And Chelsea, I said to you, every single horse that I walked up to, every single time I went to a fence, the horse came to me. And you
Yeah.
said that's a really good sign and doesn't always happen. Explain to me why that's so important.
Yeah, like the horses here, they feel like they have a voice. They feel like they're, like I said, respected mutually, and that they are like honored in their individuality. And it means a lot of things. Like it's good and it's bad, like it's, I say bad, but I mean, it means that they can be fully themselves, which sometimes means they do things that we're like, please don't do that. That's like a little
Well,
too much exuberance or a little too much self-expression. But I wouldn't have it any other way,
but when they see a human, they see a stranger, they're assuming that that human is going to be a friend. They're not assuming that that human is going to, as you said, be confusing or hard on them.
Actually, absolutely. Like horses really thought thrive on clarity, and we've tried really hard here to provide that. Like I have a lot of staff members and a lot of students that manage and handle the horses, and we try to have so much consistency and clarity in the way we communicate with them that it doesn't feel like the horses see a human and they're like, there's that weird foreigner speaking a different language that I can't understand, and I just have to get out of here before I get confused by this conversation. They're like, oh, I'm curious as to what this person might have to say today. What game are we going to play? What are we going to do together that I can learn from? And I just love that. That's so valuable to me.
Well, Chelsea, when we come back from a break, I want to ask you about some of the horses in your life then and the lessons that they've taught you. But we do have to go to a break. We're talking with Chelsea Kennedy. Her new book, Finding Purpose, is about a lifetime with horses, but also lessons learned from one challenging oneself and the other people in your life. The phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. I'm talking with horse expert Chelsea Kennedy about her new book, Finding Purpose. It's about lessons she's learned throughout her life from horses and horse people. Chelsea is an experienced equestrian. She is a competitor and a trainer, and she owns Unexpected Farm in Wales. Share your comments and questions. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. So many horses you write about, Chelsea, and we don't have time to talk about all of them, but why don't you tell me about a couple horses who've meant a lot to you in your lifetime and what they've taught you?
That's so hard because there's been so
I
many.
bet.
I think if I have to go way, I'll go way back once and then I'll do a more recent one. So way back in my high school days, I had a lovely little lease horse. So when you don't have the finances to own a horse and care for one, you can sometimes lease them from an owner. And I had a little guy, his name was Eugene or Euglena, what a strange little name for a horse. But he Again, looking back, I can see it so much more. He was so incredibly big-hearted and forgiving of all of my teenage angst and all of my the stuff that I would just bring to the barn every day. And he was so willing to try everything I presented to him. And I didn't know then like how valuable that was and how rare that is until I got much older and experienced, so many other horses. But I did know at that time that he had a presence about him that always put me at ease, always set me at ease and let me do what we were describing at the beginning, like come to him with whatever I had and be accepted. And he just was so special. And like I said, I've really realized now what a rarity that is in horses in general. Because they are incredibly sensitive animals, and not all of them can be sensitive in the way that nature makes them, and also be present with all your stuff without feeling reactive in their own skin. So he was pretty special, pretty amazing. And then I think I have to say a horse that I had called Eddie. He really sent me on the journey that I've been on in the last 7 or 8 years, because you don't know what you don't know, which is another major theme of the book. And I often would think like, I got this. I know what I'm doing. I've got the skill set. I've got the tools in my toolbox. And he just presented me with things that I had not experienced before, and like wasn't progressing on a training path that I understood. Like it wasn't linear. And there were a lot of things that I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And so he really encouraged me to seek more information and like figure out what I was missing that would be helpful to him and horses like him. And because of him, I went searching and I met my good friend Tick Maynard, who really opened my eyes to a level of horsemanship connected with performance work that I hadn't seen before, but that I had been like craving and wanting to do better and understand more. And so, I kind of credit him with setting me on my most recent path, which has really then again opened up my business and my connections throughout the horse world because of that curiosity and openness that I discovered through him.
So, is what you're gracefully saying, Chelsea, is that it was a very difficult horse that
Yes,
set you
yes.
on this set you on this journey. That
Yeah,
if all you'd
yeah.
had were very easy horses, you might not be where you are today.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that horses, when you are presented with a difficult horse as a trainer, you have two options. You either try to fit a round peg into the square hole of your methods, which in the end might either like quote unquote break the horse, so like kill their will, but make them submit, or end up in a situation that's really dangerous because the horse says, no, I'm not going to submit, and I'm going to lash out in these ways to protect myself. And like neither of those are options that I'm willing to entertain. Like I feel like there is always like a middle ground, and sometimes that middle ground is this horse is physically incapable of this job that I wish it could do, so I have to make a better give it a different life. Or this horse is physically damaged or emotionally damaged in such a way that it's not safe for them to be around people. So there are options that are uncomfortable when you choose that middle path, but I feel like they're so much kinder to both horse and human than like trying to make it work or pretending it's not a problem.
We'll go to calls, and our first one is from Peggy from the Maine State Society for Protection of Animals. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks for calling in.
I am just enjoying this conversation so much. Chelsea, I imagine you're familiar with the MSSPA here in Windham, Maine,
yeah,
where
absolutely.
We rescue and rehabilitate horses. So I'm listening with great interest in your conversation today. And just there's so many parts of what you're saying that relate to the work that we do here. And the one thing that maybe is a little bit different for us is many of the horses come to us with no backstory. We don't know the backstory, particularly if they've been seized by law enforcement. So we are presented with these horses who are generally, not always, but generally in terrible physical shape, and along with that, you know, emotionally shut down. So the work that happens here in the process of rehabilitating these horses, both emotionally and physically, is so rewarding and incredibly informative. And you kind of hit the nail on the head with meeting the horse where the horse is at.
Yeah.
And so as when we get a horse back to optimum physical health, we can begin to try to at least peel back the layers of what this horse has come through in order to end up in a shelter like ours. And the thing that just every time knocks me out is the fact that these horses are willing to trust again, and they're so resilient. I mean, there are so many lessons in these horses for all of us as human beings. But I say this all the time, they have no reason to trust humans. Humans have failed them in many capacities. And yet they get here and, you know, boy, some of them are so shut down. I'm thinking of a mare we had that was tied to a post for a year. And when she got here, she just, you know, looked like she'd lost her last friend. Of course, she had no reason to live. And she's now doing equine therapy with vets through the Travis Mills Foundation. And so her story is amazing. But you multiply that by the dozens of horses that come through here, and they have no reason to believe that this new set of humans is going to be any better than the others.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen that. So they are really remarkable animals. In a long story short, is I guess the message I want to add, because I know that you know that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's something so rewarding about figuring out the puzzle of a new horse in that way. Like, for sure, I think, you know, a rescue has a different scenario than what I do here. But I would also say that even when a horse comes with the backstory of a human, like what human beings are telling me, that doesn't mean it's the horse's story. That doesn't mean it's what they experienced. And you'll hear all the explanations that a person and like prior owners will give you about a horse that comes into training, let's say. And I'll start working with that horse and I'll be like, that is not what I'm seeing. I'm seeing something very different in what this horse is giving me as feedback. And then it becomes, it's like, I basically don't ever take what the people say as the truth. It's that same openness of like, yes, I'll take that into consideration for sure. But let's see what the horse actually says. And then it's like a little puzzle. Like, it's a fun little game to be like, huh, I wonder what this one's going to be like, you know?
Peggy, thanks so much for calling in and for the work that you do. Chelsea, listening to you talk about the puzzle and figuring it out, one thing I learned from your book is the concept of groundwork that, again, I'm not an equestrian, but learning that, and tell me if I'm right, it seems as though groundwork is before you ever get on the horse, getting to know the horse, and whether you're doing something with a long line or whether you're just watching the horse. And it seems as though to you that is very, very important and possibly the most important part of training.
Yeah, incredibly important. Thanks for bringing that up. I forget, you know, when you do something every day, it's just what you do, and you forget that it's something you didn't always do and that other people don't do it, you know? And so, like, I didn't grow up doing groundwork in that way. Like, basically, you just got on road. And it's very different to experience a horse when you can't see their expression, you can only feel what's happening underneath you and like see the broad, the big picture of the horse's body from that perspective. But you can't see their eye, you can't see their mouth, you can't see their nostrils. And as we as humans know, like your face, a person's facial expression and animals too, tells us so much about what they're feeling, what they're thinking, what they're processing. And when I started to learn more about groundwork, that shift of perspective from above the horse to watching their expression, I couldn't believe the amount of information I had been missing in that shift of perspective. And now, I would say, like, I would, if there was a reason why I could never ride a horse again, I would be okay with just doing groundwork for the rest of my life. Because I feel like it's so rewarding and so informative, and you can get so much done in a relationship. And people don't always understand this, but you can also get a ton done like physically, like in building muscle and building flexibility and building those things that us humans value in the way our horses go, that horses don't really care about.
And I do think there's an analogy for all of us. You know, what's the old saying that God gave us 2 ears and one mouth for a reason? But it's the idea that watching and listening and, as you say, being curious is often much more important than trying to force a situation, control a situation.
Totally. Like now, you know, when I get a horse in for training, or a horse of my own, I don't ride that horse for weeks, sometimes month, a month or more, because I just feel like there's so much information I need to get. And that isn't everyone's cup of tea, you know? Like some people want
Oh, for
faster, they
sure.
want, yeah. And I just say, sorry, you know, like that's not for me. That we're not compatible in that way. And so be it.
I'll go to Anne calling from Cumberland. Hi, Anne, go ahead.
Hi, yes. Well, I was lucky enough to be one of those horse girls that started at 6 months old and at 7 years old got a pony. But little did I know until I went to a Monty Roberts exposition down in Tufts, Mass, which was almost like a religious experience when he takes a horse that's never been handled and in under half an hour has a rider on its back because the horse is completely turned and trusted him. And fast forward, I end up with a 17, one and a half big guy that was trying to slowly kill me. And my trainer told me to get the Pirelli Natural Horsemanship because horses look for leadership. And it changed my life because it made the horse, it switched from the right brain, which is the ask questions later after we've taken off, to the left brain and the licking and chewing. And so the horse was happier because he was having to think, and I was happier because I was staying on his back. And it's just, you know, it just gave me a new insight. Even though I'd been with horses all my life, in my 50s and 60s, I learned all this new stuff about horses and how they read a human soul. They just literally, they can tell you what you're doing that day as you walk in the barn. They've got it. So I just want to thank you for what you're doing and tell you how they've changed my life.
And
We
thank you for your
appreciate that.
call.
Yeah. And I appreciate you bringing up Pat Pirelli. You know, he really mainstreamed horsemanship and groundwork for so much of the world, and really did a huge service to horses in his lifetime by helping people understand them better in the way that Anne was just describing.
We do need to take another quick break. What are your questions for Chelsea Kennedy about horsemanship? What is your relationship with horses about with horses or other animals? Give us a call 1-800-399-3566. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram or send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. My guest today, Chelsea Kennedy, is an equestrian and the author of a new memoir, Finding Purpose. We're talking about horses, what they teach us, and about the impact of these life lessons. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. Chelsea, you've got an event coming up to launch the book. That's Monday, right?
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. We're going to have the little launch party at Maine Beer Company in Freeport on Monday the 8th from 6 to 8. And I'm really excited because one of my very good friends, Caroline Culbertson, who, if you are a podcast fan and love horses, was the host of Equestrian Voices podcast for a couple of years. Just an amazing award-winning podcaster. And she also happens to live right in Durham, Maine, and now does her own podcast called the Horse Person Podcast. So she is going to be joining us, and she's just so great to talk to, and also my amazing editor of the book, Rebecca. So we're going to have a great discussion, and there'll be food and obviously Maine beer. So I'm really excited about it.
We'll go to Esther calling from Poland. Hi, Esther, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted you to know, horses have filled my life since I was 4. I am now 75. I was a competitive cross-country rider for years and won many events in the state of Maine and one in New Hampshire. Taught my daughter ride at the age of 3. And anyone who has a horse should love them till the day you put them down, which I've had to do with 2. And I just want to thank you for this because it's a lifelong passion of mine, to have horses. I don't have one now, but I take care of 2 Belgian mules and a Heflinger for a farmer up the road. In fact, I'm getting right now to get their snacks ready and go up and groom them. Yeah, that's what I have to say.
Esther, thank you so much for calling. Our last 2 callers, Chelsea, you can hear the emotion and the passion in their voice when they talk about horses.
Yep, I've had to tamp down those waterworks a couple times just in this discussion. You know, every time I talk about horses, I don't know, it's just something about them. And I saw something recently on social media that I was like, that makes sense, where someone was talking about how, you know, horse girls get labeled a little bit, you know, there's a stigma around being a horse girl. And I think that what this post was saying is basically that we just process our emotions faster than a lot of other people. We wear our hearts on our sleeves, and because of that, we can work well with horses because they do the same thing. And it's just the way we are. Like, we're built this way. It's a superpower.
An email here from Amy. I've ridden horses on and off most of my adult life. So many horses with many different personalities over the years. Now in my 60s, I have my own sweet Morgan gelding for the first time. He is the perfect match for me. I appreciate his willingness, curiosity, and big heart as we train and just spend time together. I have done energy work for years and now share Reiki and massage with him. Do you do any energy work with horses? It's hard enough to explain to others how this deepens our relationship.
Yeah, I talk about in the book a bunch about how I've had a lot of weird experiences with horses and energy. And I don't have one specific modality that I'm like, that's the one. But I also will never shun someone who feels like any modality has made a difference in their relationship with their horse. So we, at the farm here, we definitely have massage and chiropractic that happen. We have a wonderful craniosacral practitioner who just works little miracles with horses. And we've had animal communicators, you know, like it's, we run the gamut here. So whatever, I feel like whatever works for your horse and with, for that person, that's what matters.
We'll go to Maria calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Maria, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I have a story, a wonderful story about horses. I live in Yarmouth, and I decided to move to Yarmouth a little while ago. And the property that I moved to was formerly an equestrian property. And everyone said, oh, you're going to get horses, you're going to get horses. And I said, over my dead body, am I going to get horses? Reason being, I'm a solo mom, and I have two daughters that I adopted from Russia out of orphanages in Novokuznetsk, Russia. And so I had quite enough to take care of me. Both of them had quite a few issues and challenges. And so life went on, and I sort of, long story short, accidentally inherited a horse. And then when you have a horse, you have to have a second horse because horses need more than one horse. And incidentally, the second horse was Elliot, who was on here previously, brought to my farm. And so I had two horses. And my older daughter, who had a lot of trauma and a lot of issues, she started just hanging out a lot with Elliot and grooming him and learning about him and spending more and more time out in the stable. And it just transformed her. She just became a different person. She came out. She was happier. She was able to work with her mother better. It was just extraordinary. And then my second daughter was getting a little bit older, and she had even more issues and was really taking them out on me. And so I said, I think she needs a pony. And so we brought home a pony, and same thing, but even more so, that pony just literally saved that child. She had so much trauma and so many issues. And I really believe that that pony just saved her life. So I will always have horses. My daughters are a little bit older now, but they still ride all the time. And I just am forever grateful for horses sort of accidentally coming into our lives and literally saving our lives.
Maria, thank you for that beautiful story. And it makes me think of the horses that are used for horse therapy, Chelsea, that, yeah. You've got, you're in the competitive world, but it is really a remarkable thing to watch, a child with severe special needs on the back of a horse, smiling and doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the ones that get me are the minis that go into elder care homes, and watching someone with dementia or someone who's really, lonely and struggling in those ways, just come out of their shell with that connection. Like it's pretty unfathomable.
Maria, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Landon calling from Brewer. Hi, Landon. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. I just wanted to ask Chelsea about we've used horses for like military use for centuries upon centuries. It's only like around World War I and World War II or like conventional warfare, they start to become more of a civilian sort of deal. And I just wanted to ask, like in the modern era, last couple centuries, we've had more people talk about the ethics of horses and their uses. Okay. And like specifically with sports betting and like horse racing. I just wanted to ask, how do you feel about the ethics in the modern day about horse races? And I mean, I know typically the riders are more dangerous than the horse, but notably, horses a lot of times are bred for horse racing in the modern era.
Yeah, I think about this question a lot, like not just in relationship to horse racing, but into any horse sport. I think about how most of the time horses are benefiting people more than we're benefiting them, and like how they are used in a very specific way. There's no other way around it. And I often have wondered, like, should I be doing this? Is this ethical? Like, should I impose my will or my desires for anything specific on another living creature? I go back and forth on that. Like, I'm always open to discussions around it because I'm curious how people manage that rub for themselves. Because for me, it feels like a rub, And I have come to a place where I accept the fact that suffering is inevitable and it's just part of existence. Like, we can't escape suffering. There's no utopian existence for any living thing in this creation. And I have the capacity to like lower that suffering to the greatest degree that I can. Right. And so I think about like horses that are used in a utilitarian way in other parts of the world and how they often are suffering in a large way. And then I think about the horses on my horse farm living in their cushy existence with their blankets and their shavings and their constant hay in front of them and their doting parents. And I'm like, you know, on the scale of suffering, this is very low. And I can make that even more so in the way that I train the horses. I do think that there are industry practices in every horse sport that are not okay. And I love that it's becoming more mainstream to talk about that. And that those governing bodies have had to become more transparent about their management of those things. I think that that's a necessity. So I hope that that continues.
Landon, thank you for the question. And speaking of, you have a horse, don't you, Chelsea? Luna, that started her life as a wild horse.
Yeah, that's a really good connection to make there, Jennifer. Like, so Luna was a Mustang, is a Mustang, but was a wild Mustang living in California. And in our country, the Bureau of Land Management is tasked with making sure that those animals don't overrun the resources available to them in any given place. And so they round them up and then they basically try to get them adopted out. There are way more horses than there are people to adopt them. And I decided to go on an adventure and adopt a wild Mustang in order to do a competitive thing with her, which is one of the ways that people are incentivized to adopt these animals. Now, I will say the competition was my goal, but it was like the smallest part of what I got from that experience. She is just such an amazing creature.
And she's still part of your
talk
life.
About her.
Okay.
Right. I can't talk about her without getting a little choked up because she's just such a genuine creature. She's taught me so much about how to relate in a genuine, authentic way to other creatures, and specifically about how, you know, in working with her, I then could see ways I could do a better job with our domestic horses. They're just so different. And our horses have lost so much of their subtle communication because they've had to in the way that we surround them with our unnatural things. And so she really brought me back to that like base level of communication that horses have with each other. And that was such a gift. And it's bittersweet because, you know, I love to think of her roaming the plains of California with her herd and her baby and her friends, and the fact that she was taken from that and is now in this very domestic situation, it's tricky. But just like we were just talking about, her lot in life is so much better than the plight of so many of her fellow Mustangs who've either starved or are sitting in feedlots waiting to be adopted. And so again, I can only do the best I can for the ones that I can do something for.
I'm going to read an email from Catherine. I'm typical. I started riding at 4 years old. I finally had my own horse at 12. She was swayback, around 15, with the smoothest canter I'd ever known. I kept her in my grandmother's barn across the road. Her barn had not seen a horse since the 1930s. What I got from the experience was daily routine of complete care for an animal, physical labor, responsibility, sacrifice, spending every afternoon after school riding around the neighborhood. She was my closest friend and became a rallying point for my cousins and friends to share her as a friend. So thank you for that, Catherine. Chelsea, thank you for the hour you've spent with us and for your new book, Finding Purpose. Chelsea Kennedy was our guest today. She is a competitive rider, a master horse trainer, an author now, and she runs Unexpected Farm in Wales. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, it is our annual Best and Overlooked Books show. We are going to hear recommendations for great books as gifts or for yourself. You might want to have a pad of paper and a pen handy. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.